This is F1 Debrief. What is this crazy world we live in? Coming up on this show, we talk about the Lucca cuckoo clock, Home and Away's latest export, and a word from Italy.
So I'm looking at these show notes and it says here, there is no intro to this podcast. Is this true?
Yeah, I couldn't really think up an intro this week. It's been really busy. I think that this show is late enough. We should just get on with it.
You, young lady, are slacking. You're a slacker.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Jaime Alguersuari, who has released his first single and album under the name Squire. Well, iTunes says Jaime Alguersuari presents Squire, anyway. The single is called Organic Life. It's old school dance music, which you can hear in the background.
Is that what I'm hearing? It's very retro. Can we do the whole podcast to the sound of Jaime?
Not without getting sued, I don't think.
No, that could be an issue.
It's been a bad week for journalists using the internet in Monza. Wi-Fi at the circuit was €120 for the media, which is extortionate, really. Plus, it died just before qualifying, which is extortionate and useless. After something of a mutiny by the journalists, they managed to get refunds, which is something.
Finally, power to the people, power to the journalists. I wouldn't pay that much money.
It's been a good week for Naren Kartikeyan, who has been confirmed in the HRT for the Indian Grand Prix. Not a big surprise at all, but he will also take part in free practice on Friday in Singapore to try and get used to the car. He says that it was always part of the deal when he stepped aside after the European GP that he would be back for India. Tony Fernandez has previously said he wants Chandok to race in India as well, so we may see a return from him also.
I did read that Collis thought that Kartikeyan was the best driver from his country.
Yeah.
He's absolutely such a good driver that he was replaced halfway through the season by Daniel Ricciardo. Fantastic, that man.
It's been a bad week for journalists again, as there was quite a lot of crime over the weekend in Monza. Chandok tweeted that he went back to the restaurant he got robbed at last year, keeping a strong grip on his bag. At the same time as that, Guido Vandergaard had his bags, laptop and trainers stolen from his car. Maneep's hire car was broken into with his computer taken, and the commercial manager at Team Lotus had his sat-nav nicked from his car, all on the same night.
And we thought Brazil was the most dangerous Formula One race to attend.
News and views.
You know how I like to do F1 news in small pieces?
Some might say you're obsessed with F1 news in small pieces.
Yeah, well, there is F1 Minutes, which there's an app for that, by the way.
I heard that. There's a bargain. Bargain of an app there. Yeah,
if you search in iTunes for F1 Minute, you might find it there. All the news this week seems to be small, little, bite-sized chunks of news, so I thought we could just rattle through it.
Go ahead. Make my day.
It was announced this week that Sam Michael will move to McLaren after the Singapore Grand Prix.
A surprise. Didn't expect it. Didn't see it coming. Well done to Sam. He's landed on his feet at McLaren.
Pirelli have announced the tyre choices for the Japanese and Korean Grand Prix. Surprisingly, they've gone for Supersofts at Korea.
They must know what they're doing, but that is an unusual choice. I agree.
Vettel released an SUV.
It's minging.
It was a bit weird looking.
It's fat and ugly and not becoming of a Formula One world champion. What are they thinking?
Red Bull and Renault extended their engine deal for 5 years.
It's a partnership that's working well. No reason to change. Good news for Renault. Good news for Red Bull.
Toro Rosso gained a big new sponsor, some kind of Spanish energy company that are linked to the UAE energy
company. I'm surprised
company.
Anybody wants to sponsor a car that looks like that.
Pirelli, again, they want to revamp colour coding next year, and they want to get rid of the spare set of hard tyres that nobody uses.
I am slightly suspicious that Pirelli are overusing their PR muscle. It seems like every decision that has to be made via Autosport. Anytime Paul Hembree wants anything done, I'll give the guys from Autosport a call. I'll get some press about this decision. The decision to drop one set of tyres seems like something that could have been sorted out by the FIA. Behind closed doors, and the FIA could have made a nice announcement saying, we have decided, we have worked with Pirelli to reduce the amount of rubber we're bringing to races, and it will be a great PR win for everybody concerned. And it seems like Pirelli are just going, we are redefining Formula One, one decision at a time, and every time via the media.
Yeah, it was sneaky. Good to start with.
And it's overused, yeah. But considerably.
They better not change the colours, otherwise I'll have to do a new song. There was a brief skirmish with the Indian GP as the government were not willing to grant an exception to teams for custom duties. However, race promoter JP Sports stepped in and said they'd pay the taxes themselves if necessary. It seems the government weren't willing to classify F1 as a sport. It's entertainment.
And people say that India doesn't get F1. I think they've nailed it from the off.
Sergio Perez drove for Ferrari in a brief F1 test at Fiorano in an old car as part of the Ferrari Driver Academy.
Do not understand this. Makes no sense to me. Explain it.
People say they're training him up to replace Massa.
Okay. And why is it Sauber? Because he joined the training program after he joined Sauber, right? It's like, I don't understand the point of a young driver program when you take somebody who is in Formula One and train them to stay in Formula One. That's exactly what it is. It's a middle-aged driver program.
If you thought you'd heard the last of Nick Heidfeld, you'd be wrong, because he's spoken out and says he reckons he can get a seat in F1 next year. I'm not sure there's any space for him.
I think Nick Heidfeld can get a seat in F1 next year. I just think it will be in the driver steward's office, where he will fit in perfectly in the seat for ex-F1 drivers.
Tony Fernandez has said that if his team don't do better next year, then he's going to give up. Although he did backtrack after that and say he'll make some changes rather than give up completely.
Sounds very much like a warning to Mike Gascoigne. I wonder if there's room at McLaren for Mike.
Ron Howard has started filming his Lauda and Hunt movie in Germany. It's called Rush and stars Daniel Brühl as Niki Lauda. He's been in The Bourne Ultimatum. And also Chris Hemsworth as James Hunt. He has been in Home and Away.
Has he?
Apparently.
Qualifying.
I must apologise to your good self and all the listeners in advance for the section on qualifying. I slept clean through it. I missed it all by the last 2 minutes. Poor timing on my part, but I was working very, very hard in the build-up to qualifying, and therefore I couldn't do it all this weekend. So I have nothing to add to this section of the show.
So I'm doing this bit as well.
You are.
I'm carrying this show.
Well, if you'd written an intro, yes, you would be.
Right. Well, the key things that you need to know then. It was very sunny. There was rain predicted at some point during the weekend, but it never, ever came. It was hot and sunny, which was actually nice to see after all the grey clouds we've seen recently. Luca de Montezemolo kept poking his head out of the garage and waving at the fans. It was quite amusing. And some of them...
Like one of those wooden clocks. when it's sunny, one guy comes out. Yeah. When it's sunny, the McLaren guy comes out. That kind of thing?
It was a bit like that, yeah. In the first session, Webber left it quite late to go out. There was a lot of talk that he hadn't changed his engine when everyone else had, because Monza is a high-speed circuit and heavy on the engines.
Didn't know that. Okay, good knowledge.
Pastor Maldonado managed to crash coming out of Parabolica in Q1. He went straight into the barriers and lost his front wing. He hadn't set a time, but he gave his mechanics a bit of a headache. They had to rush it through, and they did a great job because he did manage to get out and get through to the next round.
He crashed in Q1 and he still got through to Q2.
He did.
Nice work, Williams.
I thought it was an interesting final few minutes, seeing who would drop out, because that last place that isn't the new teams wasn't decided.
In Q1.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It wasn't decided this time. So it was interesting. But in the end, it was Jaime Alguersuari. I'm not sure if they were too worried about that, though, because whenever Toro Rosso qualify that far down, they always end up flying up the ranks and picking up points.
Jaime does well when he has a spare set of tyres to his name. Was that a team decision, or was it just bad driving on his part?
I don't think it was deliberate. The second session was similarly interesting at the end, not so much throughout the whole thing. McLaren, they thought they could get through the second session on harder tyres, even though everyone else knew that wasn't going to be possible. But they gave it a go, realised it wasn't, and so they had to sacrifice one of their soft tyres. But at least they had grand ambitions.
Yeah, but McLaren and grand ambitions, yeah. That never ever works so well.
No, that's true. Bruno Senna just scraped through and he pushed Paul de Resta down into 11th by just 6 thousandths of a second. How frustrating is that for Paul de Resta?
That is quite, yeah. You can,
6 thousandths!
Yeah, but it's Monza. That happens at Monza a lot. I did manage to catch in Q3 the fact that Ferrari sent out Massa to run interference for Fernando Alonso so that Fernando could get a slipstream and get more pace. That was nice of Massa to do that.
That is what they said, but it didn't look like that to me because they were nowhere near each other, really.
That must have been the plan. You could see what they were thinking of doing. Unfortunately, it may not have worked out exactly as it was, but it's interesting that Massa had nobody to get a toe from. He was the first guy.
Yeah, well, Massa qualified somewhere in the top 10. I don't know. Alonso was fourth.
Disaster from Ferrari, correct?
No, it was brilliant.
Right, not a disastrous
amazing
qualifying.
Amazing qualifying, great day.
Because Fernando Alonso did better than Massa.
Yeah. As you would imagine, Vettel was super speedy, and both the McLarens, they either messed up or they couldn't put their last lap together, so they gave it up, and Vettel had a half a second for his pole position, which is just ridiculous.
I don't know how he does that. I mean, for a time I assumed that Red Bull must be doing something unique in order to get that kind of pace out of the car.
Does unique mean illegal?
That was my interpretation. However, seeing as Webber never, ever manages to find that kind of pace, you have to assume it's coming from Vettel. Now, I've never had him down as a super special qualifying driver, but somehow he just finds pace from nowhere every time. It's unbelievable. That kind of pace is just astounding in a place like Monza.
Yeah, well, at Monza, they didn't think they were going to be very good there either. But Webber used to be considered a qualifying
specialist.
So yep. If you're up against him and you're trouncing him by however much it is, then that's definitely some pace you've got there. The other thing, the final thing I've got to say about qualifying is that Nico Rosberg, he was in the top 10 and he qualified on hard tyres. He sort of sacrificed his qualifying position for the race.
Thinking long term.
Yeah. Schumacher was only one place ahead of him on the softer tyres. So that's not a bad qualifying indeed, or it's a bad one from Schumacher. And it looked like an interesting strategy split for Mercedes, but it didn't work out.
In the race.
The race.
May we discuss the military's secret weapon, the Mark II Exocet Liuzzi missile.
Yeah.
Causes carnage wherever it may go.
We haven't had first lap carnage like this in a long time. And I think we have been not necessarily complaining, but commenting on that for a while. So I suppose we do have to acknowledge that it happened.
And when it went wrong, it went very wrong.
The safety car came out because four cars trashed completely.
Yes. Unfortunately, we never got to see Nico Rosberg's long-term strategy play out. Paul Petrov, he was taken out almost instantly. Senna's race was ruined. Many other strategies were thrown into disarray as a result of Liuzzi getting a wheel onto the grass and then simply losing all control of everything.
Yeah, I did have a note from Callum who said, "Dear Christine and Mr. C, here's a thought. Do you suppose that Liuzzi's off-track excursion resulted in the highest running position for an HRT? By my calculation, he was in 10th position the moment he slid back onto the track. Thanks for all the entertainment, Callum." Well, yeah, he was up alongside Petrov and then punted him off. But
he'd overtaken
that count?
A Renault. Mm. He was nearly on the tail of Mark Webber when he sideswiped Nico Rosberg.
Yeah, Webber was lucky in that instance, not so much later on.
Well, Webber became a victim of his own demise, but thankfully he got a decent enough start to be clear of Liuzzi. Just on the subject of Liuzzi, I mean, Callum is absolutely correct at that point, no question. Sadly, I think you may have to pass some kind of timing beam in order for the time.
It doesn't count if you're off track.
No, and one corner into the Grand Prix, no one will accept that as a high position. However, it's very hard to apportion blame in the Liuzzi incident because for the second race in a row, no decent camera angles are of the start of the incident. Liuzzi blamed Heikki Kovalainen. Heikki threw up his hands after the race and said, "Well, there's nothing to do with me.
I wasn't anywhere near you."
The only shot we've got is the overhead helicam shot, and that doesn't tell us all too much. So unfortunately, very hard to blame anybody. But whatever the case, it ruined a lot of people's afternoons, including mine.
Yeah, well, you do like to apportion blame, so that's doubly ruined
for you. My favourite thing about Formula One.
It also was not so good for Kobayashi. I think he had to come in for an early stop, and the Saubers looked like they were planning long stints because they're always so good on their tyres. But in the end, neither of them finished the race because of gearbox issues, so that was their own mechanical troubles.
Yes,
that knocked them out.
That was something else I was very interested in seeing in the race. I mean, I wanted to see how Rosberg was going to do, and Michael Schumacher has such a fast car, such a great car, that Mercedes. You know, it wasn't a race winner, but it was a very fast fast chassis for Monza, and Michael Schumacher had such a great race. I mean, you could see what Michael could do. Imagine what Rosberg could have done.
It would have been a really good, clear example of the strategy in qualifying, sacrificing your qualifying for the race as well. It would have been a good example, but it was not to be. Another retirement. I mean, there were loads of retirements this race, more than we've seen in a while, I think. Daniel Ricciardo, he retired, but then he came back out on track, and there was one of the fun battles that we got to watch, because there were a couple that went on for the whole race, but one of the fun ones was watching whether Ricciardo could overtake the Saubers who had retired.
Who were parked on the side of the grass.
Yeah, so he was like 13 laps behind then. He was 10 laps behind.
That has to be the very definition of a dull race when you're watching the back marker who's been out of the Grand Prix for 9 laps, whether he can unlap himself to the car that's just pulled off to the side of the racetrack.
Well, I thought it was fun. He did manage to pass both the Saubers, but when he got to the end of the race, he wasn't classified because he was too many laps behind. So never mind. Out in front, the people that did get through the first corner unscathed, Alonso, he made a move on Vettel.
fine starting Ferrari there. Very good from Fernando Alonso. But I was more impressed with Mr. Vettel's pass to regain the lead on the outside. Was it on the outside of Parabolica? I forget which corner it was, but he took to the grass to pass Fernando Alonso. And we have discussed at length the inability for Vettel to overtake. But in Monza, he was given no quarter. That was fantastic to watch. And remember that Vettel it could easily be in a cruise and collect mode. I mean, the guy could finish fourth for every race for the rest of the season and still be, well clear in terms of points. There's no reason for him to be taking risks like he is, but I'm glad that he's doing it because it's giving us something to watch.
Yeah, I like the people that say, oh, everyone that said that he couldn't overtake, in your face. But actually, it's just one move, it's good. It's the start. It shows he can do it. It shows that perhaps he's waking up to that now. But
yes,
it's not like we were saying that without any evidence that he couldn't overtake.
It doesn't change anything in terms of Vettel's inability to overtake under pressure.
He's not under pressure.
Yeah, when you have that much of a lead, I guess he has more confidence in himself. What you saw at Silverstone was a terrible example of an inability to overtake from Vettel, and what you saw at Monza was the opposite. So let's see more of what we saw in Monza and less of what we saw in Silverstone.
Hmm. Another brief battle was between Webber and Massa.
That was brief.
That was really brief. It didn't last very long. Webber collided, and Webber's car tried to eat itself.
That was all Webber's fault, sadly, and unfortunately ruined another of Massa's Grand Prix. Mm. When is that guy going to get a break?
The race edits we keep seeing on F1.com, all they seem to show is Rob sitting on the pit wall swearing. That's all he does anymore.
Yeah, in frustration at Massa, is something else has gone wrong. But no, Massa couldn't have done, I don't think Massa could have done anything different. He got tipped into a spin. I thought his recovery was good. We talked in the past about Lewis Hamilton spinning into traffic, but I thought Massa played it well. He lost a lot of places for it, and that's the way it was. And then Webber's car decided to eat its own front wing, which sent him into the wall. Unfortunate, dangerous, and scary.
Yeah.
But Webber did all that to himself.
That left our attention on the big one, Schumacher versus Hamilton.
Huge!
Well, actually, it was a big battle. Then they pitted. Then it was a big battle again.
Long runner, that was. So what did you make of the radio call from Ross Brawn? Somebody we haven't heard of for a long, long time. Good to hear Ross back on the radio. Aww.
Yeah. Well,
Michael, be more nice. Please be more nice.
It was definitely a bit pleading, a bit worried. Well, I did have a note from Anatoly on G+, actually, who said to me, continuing my debate with you from the German GP about Buemi and Heidfeld and Spa's Hamilton-Kobayashi collisions, I'd like to hear your position on Schumacher pushing Hamilton to the grass. Personally, I still think this is an extremely dangerous move with potentially fatal consequences, and the guy in front should be penalised mercilessly.
Is that to me or is that to you? Would you like to tackle that first, or do you want me to take a look at this
one? It was to me, but I don't know. I mean, I think he should have got penalties, because clearly if your team boss has to come on the radio and tell you not to do it, then you're doing something wrong.
There's two parts to this, the way I see it. Firstly, I do not understand why Lewis gets on the radio and says, this guy in front of me is making two moves, and McLaren respond by saying, well, we're already on it. We've passed it to Charlie. He's looking into it. Charlie then calls up Mercedes pit wall and says, can you tell your driver to stop doing that? I don't understand that process. Why Charlie didn't pass it to the race stewards. The race stewards put up a message saying, we're investigating this. And then Michael Schumacher gets a penalty. For whatever reason, the process that normally happens for any race incident didn't occur. Charlie Whiting took it into his own hands to get hold of Ross Brawn. And Ross Brawn then took it upon himself to sort out Michael Schumacher. And it took two attempts, if not more, to make that happen. And the race stewards never had an opportunity to look at it, as far as I understand. After the race, the designated driver steward, was it Derek Daly? Admitted that he thought he'd made a mistake by not having a chance to look at the incident. And he said he'd never been told, Charlie Whiting never pointed out to the stewards that this needed looking at. They were still looking at the Massa Webber incident at the time and missed the two moves happening on screen, and they were never told that it needed to be looked into. And to me, that is complete nonsense. That makes a mockery of Formula One and everything that's been, all the good that's gone into Formula One this past couple of years with the changes to driver stewards and all the access they have now to replays and so on, so forth. It's just, it's all fallen apart in one incident.
But there can't be. There's at least three of them. They can't all need to stare at one other incident and not be watching what's going on.
There is
someone needs to be looking at the world feed.
There is definitely a flaw in the process. And if I was Lewis Hamilton, I would have been fuming.
Well, especially because we've been saying, why is it always Lewis Hamilton? And it is again, but he's on the other side of it this time. Mm. He was being good and biding his time. He wasn't about to, you know, crash into him and attempt to dodge his move.
From Lewis Hamilton's point of view, it was great. Aggressive, you know, it's the perfect amount of aggression to take on Michael Schumacher. And from Michael Schumacher's point of view, it was typical Michael Schumacher defending.
Too much defense.
Pushing drivers onto the grass, pushing drivers into the wall. That's how Michael Schumacher drives. And having your team boss come on the radio and say, by the way, you need to stop doing that. That's embarrassing because Michael Schumacher knows how to drive. He's the oldest driver on the grid. He knows what he should and shouldn't be doing. And you would have thought he would have learned something from the backlash he got from the Barrichello incident in Hungary last year. Clearly, when he's got the helmet on, all that, you know, that fades into the distance and he forgets all about that. Terrible driving from Michael Schumacher. Amazing patience from Lewis Hamilton, who I'm surprised he just wasn't livid and didn't try to tip the guy off the road after that move. Because obviously he lost the place to Jenson Button after he lost momentum on the grass. To me, it was cut and dried. The guy needed a penalty. Stewards after the race admitted the guy needed a penalty. I don't understand what Charlie Whiting was playing at by getting on the phone to Ross Brawn.
When Hamilton did eventually get past, he was freed up to chase down the people in front. Vettel was leading by, I don't know, about 1,000 miles. Yeah. And then Alonso was there and Hamilton was there and Button was there. And it was all a big battle to see who could finish up on the podium.
I liked the close of the Grand Prix. It didn't build to a perfect crescendo, but Hamilton chasing down, I think it was Alonso in the final laps, was something to watch. Yeah. And in the middle, it died down quite significantly.
It was quite obvious that he wasn't going to be able to do it. It was fun to watch him chasing down, but he was never going to have enough laps left.
No, but you always have that, you know, as Lewis Hamilton, there's a slim chance he might have done something wrong and, you know, might have got a bit too aggressive, but it was perfect. It was a perfect amount of, well, it was a perfect drive from Lewis Hamilton. I can't fault him at all. If Michael Schumacher had done that to me, I would have been so annoyed for the rest of the race. I would have just, you know, I would have been unbearable to be on track with. So, you know, all credit to him for that. I liked the end of the race and well done to Fernando for holding him off.
Vettel won. The championship is almost his, it has to be said.
It's been almost his since May.
Yeah, but mathematically almost his now.
I don't
now.
Care. I've given up on the championship long ago.
He could get it in Singapore.
I thought you were going to say he could not get it for a minute.
No.
You know, he could take the rest of the year off.
I think that's what he has to do.
He could go rallying. Yeah. That's what could happen.
We also had a note from, I think it was a tweet from Villain F1, who said, doesn't look like Webber will get a win at all this year. That's pretty depressing with such an incredible car underneath him.
It's a world-beating car, and only one man is beating them.
That is pretty much all the highlights of the race, I think. But we do have a voicemail from a man who enjoyed the race even more than you did, I think.
Hello. My name is Luki. I'm a Formula One fan, and I'm ashamed to admit I enjoyed Schumacher's race. It hurts. All out hurts. But he was good. It was a great race. I really enjoyed the race. I mean, it settled down. It was Monza-esque, but it was great. And it was just, for a while, it was constant. Oh my God, whoa, oh, no way, oh, whoa, etc. You get my point. But I've just really enjoyed Monza. And again, I keep saying it every time I phone up, but it's just race after race after race, awesomeness. And I mean, if Vettel wasn't running away, we've got two championships, we've got Vettel, and we've got the second place championship, which is new first. So awesome. And I just really enjoyed Monza. I just can't believe I enjoyed a Schumacher race. What's happening? What is this crazy world we live in? Oh, I need to sit down. Okay, see you soon. Bye-bye.
Monza 2011. Oh, we got a start, no doubt, when Liuzzi took him out. He hit him like pins and put their races in the bin. Alonso, over the grass, kicked Vettel and Hamilton in the back. Vettel had a move in the dirt. Teflonso probably had a smirk. But Vettel became a dot while Schumi and Lewis traded spots. Button liked that battle, but Lewis, they couldn't rattle. He raced clean, even when he was keen to get the hell past Darth Vader. With a high casualty rate, DiResta managed 8th, up to 9th for Bruno, and 7th for Toro Rosso. So given a mixed bag for me, I rated it 3. No, that rhymed, but wait, I'll really give it an 8.
How in the blazes am I meant to follow that?
Well, now it's time to rate the race, so if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to hear your poem.
Thanks, Kai. Thanks a bunch. That was lovely. I'm not going to sum up the race in poetry. That's put me well off, actually. The whole thought of that has just sent shivers down my spine. Did I like the race? I didn't like it quite as much as Lukey liked it. What did I rate Spa? Because I wasn't quite on the level with Spa. Didn't have the continual interest for me. There definitely was a dip in the second third of the race where, you know, some of the key points of interest had been smashed out and knocked off and broken down.
You gave the Belgian Grand Prix a 7, and I gave that one an 8.
Ooh, do you know what? Monza was better than a 6, but maybe not on par with Spa.
Right.
Which would sort of put it in a 6.5 ballpark.
Would it indeed?
To my mind, that's sort of where it was. Not quite up there with Spa. Nice to have a dry race from beginning to end again. Much appreciated weather, thank you. And that's where it is. It's 6.5.
I'm going to go with a 7 on that one. It wasn't the best race I've ever seen. Some of the battles were good, although I did think that really it was too dominated by Hamilton and Schumacher and then Alonso and Button and that. It was like,
not the
is
best
there
direction.
Anyone else out there? Mm. But then again, there really wasn't anyone else out there because they'd all retired. Next, we need to name our driver of the day. But before we do that, we should catch up with our rookie reports to see if that has any bearing. Starting with Paul's performance report.
Maximum.
That was Stephen's view of Paul de Resta's race. And we have Davin's view of Daniel Ricciardo's race with Daniel's day out.
Qualifying.
I shall keep both of those in mind. Let me kick off with my driver of the day. I'm going to jump you on this one. I'm going to say my driver of the day probably going to be Mr. Senna. Now, I said after the last race that I didn't want to jump to any conclusions, but given how his start could have sent him off balance, could have, you know, affected his confidence in the race, he still managed to come through the field. I think he dropped down as far as 18th at one point and managed to finish in the points. And that was an incredible effort. Second race in. First race incident, nothing to do with him. A great recovery. Didn't see very much of him on the TV, sadly. But again, I think it was faultless. The guy already has put himself into the position in Renault of being the team leader. Now, in this case, because Petrov had been knocked out of contention, but he seems to have the head on his shoulders to handle the pressure. And it was a good drive from Mr. Senna. I can't find anybody else. Nobody else out there did a better job than him, other than Vettel, who did too good a job to qualify for anything.
Well, you say no one else did a good job, but we mentioned earlier that Jaime Alguersuari did not qualify so well and always ends up in the points when he does that. Well, he did it again. This time he started, I think it was 18th, and he finished 7th, which is 2 places above Senna.
Oh, you do sell a good driver. Jaime Alguersuari and Bruno Senna, our drivers of the day.
Just a couple of bits of feedback this week. The first is from Stefania, who says, "Hello, Side Podcast. This is Stefania writing in from Italy. I've been a listener of the podcast for almost a year now, and I really enjoy the show. I felt the need to write after hearing your reactions to Ferrari's apologising tweets on the last debrief. So, Italy is like a grand-scale F1 fandom, or more specifically, Tifosi turned up to the 11. Everyone feels the need to comment, even when they know nothing about the sport. Ferrari isn't currently winning every race. Fire them all. Ferrari doesn't qualify first and second. What a bunch of losers. Last race, Alonso qualifying 8th was treated as a disaster by the Italian media. And by media, I mean all of them, not just the sports journalists. What about Felipe, you say? Well, he's Felipe. We always treated him as Felipe baby, except maybe 2008. But this year, he's the butt of every joke. No one takes him seriously and gives him credit. Poor guy. Simply put, Formula One is right under soccer football on the list of things to be considered serious business. Hoping all of this made some sense. Keep up the good work."
It does make sense. Thank you, Stefania. That's good insight.
It's nice to hear from Italy.
It's great insight into how the Italian media and how Italian fans follow F1 and perceive the success or failure of F1. What it doesn't account for is why Ferrari don't even support their own drivers. Sure, I understand how the whole country might react, but within Ferrari, there still should be an unbiased handling of the two drivers.
Especially because Massa's been there longer.
There's two ways of looking at it. You could say, well, it's a Twitter account and it should, you know, be honest feedback from actual people and it shouldn't just be a corporate thing, which Ferrari are, you know, well known for doing, and they could have taken that approach, but it's almost gone too far in that whoever is handed the Twitter account is clearly a Fernando Alonso fan and clearly has no interest in Felipe Massa. And he or she, whoever it is making the situation worse. Because, I mean, there are Felipe Massa fans out there. We like Felipe Massa, and I'd like to see him do well. And when your team isn't publicly supporting you, it's very hard to do that.
There's being informal and then there's being blatantly unfair.
Yes, and it was a perfect, as we said earlier in the show, it was a perfect example of how unfair it is when you have two back-to-back races and fourth for Massa is a disaster and fourth for Alonso is amazing. It's the same position. It's a terrible way to present your team to the world. That's all I'm saying.
Next, a message from Cody who says, "Dear Christine and Mr. C, this is my first time writing in as I am somewhat new to Side Podcast. I must say that I enjoy the shows quite a lot. I would like to make a quick comment on the Italian GP and hopefully I'm not too late for your latest podcast."
You'd have to be really late to be late for this podcast.
The race itself was fantastic. The racing between Schumacher and Hamilton was, I think, some of the best stuff F1 has offered in a long time, and there was plenty of other good excitement. Though one of the greatest things I saw was the work of the track workers. Their speed and efficiency with cleaning the accidents was excellent. Perhaps they could teach track workers from NASCAR as well as from Montreal a thing or two about how to clean up a wreck quickly and without falling down in front of oncoming cars. I want to thank you for making Side Podcast and giving such great analysis on a sport that isn't given justice here in the States. That's from Cooking Cody from California.
I hadn't spotted that, so thank you to Cody. That's a fair point. It was the debris was cleared up very quickly. There were no resulting punches from that. What we will see the next race in Singapore is the exact opposite of those fantastic marshals, because the marshals in Singapore have traditionally been utterly hopeless in every single situation. So there will be a marked difference between those two. Keep an eye out for that.
If you want to send in some feedback, you can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com. You can send a voicemail to 01212887225. That's 01212-8-TRACK. Or you can visit sidepodcast.com and try and find the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about.
We don't want to make it too easy for people. You see, if they can find the contact form, they're clearly smart enough to be giving feedback.
Housekeeping.
The email we had from Stefania just a moment ago, she added a little bit at the bottom and said, "P.S. I can't seem to find your book on the iTunes store, Christine. Is it not available in Italy or am I just awful at searching?"
Did you know, it's news to me that the iBook store is available in Italy. I thought it was in 6 countries and I didn't think Italy was on that list. Do I need to investigate?
I think we need to look into this further.
I can't remember seeing it on the Italian iTunes store, because we obviously look through various stores to find comments for the app. So the F1 Minute app, I know, well, it must be in Italy, the F1 Minute app.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was available in Italy, although it must be, because we wouldn't get feedback saying, was it
Stefania.
Stefania, not the boss of Ferrari. Because Stefania wouldn't be looking for it if it didn't exist. We'll look into that and get back to you on the next show. Going to take some investigation. Good question.
While we're on the subject of books, don't worry, I'm not going to do the jingle.
Oh, go on, do the 60s jingle.
No, I'm not going to. But do buy the book and buy the app if you want to. The app is f1minute.com. The book, 365 F1 stories, which you can get on iBooks or on the Kindle store.
In most countries.
In most countries, we'll have a look and see what else we're doing wrong or if it's
what
available. Yeah. I did write a post about how if you don't have a Kindle, you don't have to be scared off and say, I can't read ebooks, I don't like it. Because often when I tell people that I've self-published my book, it's available on the Amazon store as an
Kindle
ebook,
store.
And they say, well, I don't have a Kindle. But you don't have to have a Kindle. I don't have a Kindle either. And I still manage to read lots and lots of books. So I've written a post that says other ways you can get the book, and that's available on Side Podcast.
So it's a beginner's guide to consuming all ebooks, not just your ebooks, but generally moving from paper to digital.
Yeah, although really, I mean, it's a beginner's guide how to read my book, and then once you've done that, you might want to read others, you might not.
God forbid that you just buy two books and that would be it. That wouldn't be your last purchase, would it? You could open up an entire world of digital reading anybody.
I was definitely hooked when I started reading.
You are hooked. All you do is read now. See, in the past, when we started Side Podcast, all you ever did was listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
And now all you ever do is read.
Well,
I'm really
sorry about that. It's also worth mentioning that I set up a dedicated website for all my book authory type things at christineblashford.com. I can't believe I didn't own that before. It's crazy.
With all your domain names, that was the one you overlooked.
But I've bought that and there's not an enormous amount on there at the moment, but that post is actually republished there, the How to Read eBooks post, and also a little trailer we made.
Had fun. We can make videos again.
Yeah.
We have a solution.
For 365 Everyone's Story. It's only about 15 seconds long, so it's worth having a look at.
That is going to be the benchmark for a lot of our future videos. We've talked in the past about how expensive it can be to scale videos to the level of popularity that some of our videos got to. And when they are just 10, 15, 20 seconds long, we can scale them much more. We're more able to scale them than we were before. So we're making really short trailers and short insights into various things about Formula One. There's more we can do than what we've released.
More bite-sized stuff.
I mean, if you thought F1 Minute was a short podcast, you ain't seen nothing yet.
The only other bit of housekeeping I think we have is that we've been tweaking a little bit with the comments on Cypodcast, which you may or may not have noticed depending how often you visit the blog.
And this change is to encourage people who wouldn't normally comment on Cypodcast. So the existing commenters already have a perfectly suitable commenting solution. This is a way to encourage new people and more thoughts from, well, Facebook users. That's what it is. It's specific to people who live on and like and are used to Facebook.
Yeah. So there are websites that solely use Facebook as their commenting system. And really, we just wanted to try it out and see what it was like and what the process was of putting it in place on a website and things like that. So we've linked the two together. And I think it's good because if you're on Facebook, you can say, look, I have commented here and look at the clever things I said.
I'm interested to see what it does to the discussion. It was very simple to implement. It's available on every single post. So you now have the choice of commenting the old way or commenting the new way. And it might lead to a completely different sort of discussion because your name's on there, a small avatar of your whatever you've got as your picture, so your face or whatever. You can share your comments, your Side Podcast comments, with your friends and family who are also on Facebook. And so you can bring those into the discussion too. I'm interested to see where it goes.
We also tried out the Facebook poll question feature for the we do a poll ahead of the race we were doing it just on the thread for the race itself, but we tried it in Facebook as well and actually got more responses on Facebook than we did.
Great response. Yes, so we're trying to integrate more social technology into our podcast. It's not an exclusive little world. It's not our own little world. We're trying to call out to more, so more Facebook integration. You mentioned G+. You didn't explain that you got feedback on Google+. I think that must be the first time we've got feedback on F1 Debrief via Google+, is it?
I think it probably is.
And you're liking that a lot. You're liking it even more than Facebook.
I do. Well, I mean, I never really fell in love with Facebook. I like what you can do on it and connecting with people and everything. But the actual navigation and getting around on Facebook was never that comfortable for me. But I do like Google+ quite a lot more. There aren't as many people on there, I think it's fair to say.
Again, it's a different kind of discussion. I'm seeing that. If you are a Google+ user, if you've already signed up, if you're an early adopter, how can somebody circle you?
I don't know. They just have to search for me?
No. Where are you going to put a link to your Google profile?
Always a link in the show notes.
On sidepodcast.com.
You can find them.
Get with the program. How many years have you been doing this podcast?
Too many. That must be it for this episode, I think. So next up is Singapore, where Vettel will become champion, no doubt.
Are you calling that now?
Yeah.
The championship is going to be over next weekend.
Says
That's the end of it. Mm-hmm. Can we take the rest of the season off?
No.
See you then.